Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast that chooses love over hate. My name is Corey Hazelhurst and my partner in propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Hi, Corey.
This is the second of our episodes on Islamophobia. In this one, we're talking about Islamophobia in the Conservative Party. Elements to this. Again, we're going. I'll start just by talking through what the State of Hate report says. So Hope Not Hate, which is an anti-racist organisation, puts together this report of lots of different forms of discrimination in Britain in 2018-2019. And one of the ones that it highlights and mentions is, and I'll just read the kind of subheading, which is, Islamophobia is creeping through the heart of the Tory party and a lack of action is worrying. So there's a few different case studies of Islamophobia in the Tory party. We'll have a chat about them, have a chat about what Tory voters think about Islamophobia, and then maybe think about maybe why the media hasn't covered it as much as, say, anti-Semitism in the Labour Party. So I don't know if you remember Zach Goldsmith. So he was a Conservative candidate for Mayor of London, and he did a proper dog whistle anti-Islam campaign against Sadiq Khan when they had the mayoral election.
Do you remember when Goldsmith was viewed as like a nice little liberal Tory who was a potential leadership contender, somebody that, you know, actually seemed all right compared to Peter Bone and Philip Davis?
All right compared to Peter Bone. Yeah, well, quite. I mean, it's interesting how Zach Goldsmith and Boris Johnson, who also had One Nation Tory credentials before exploding them in a bid to try and become prime minister. Well, so Goldsmith acquiesced with this kind of Islamophobic campaign. Johnson, as we said in the podcast last year, has had written comparing people who wear the burqa and talking, like saying they look like letterboxes or something, which is blatant dog whistle Islamophobia. And again, I think it's something that our friend John Cotton mentioned on the podcast at Christmas, is that kind of One Nation conservatism, Macmillan style, Disraeli style, it's just completely gone. It's got nowhere to go. It's just turbocharged Thatcherism and that's it.
The Conservative Party has become more ideological over the past few decades, and as a result of that, pragmatic individuals seemingly have been kind of squeezed out, which the result of which is that there's no one there necessarily to challenge when actual full-on racism and Islamophobia rears its ugly head.
Even now, trying to deselect people like Nick Bowles and
Dominic Grieve,
who are some of the more One Nation-y types. I mean, just to remind you, so the mayoral campaign, it sent leaflet. So it said that Sadiq Khan was associated with Islamic extremists. I think I'm right in saying that these extremists had also been speaking with Conservative Party events as well. Also, specifically targeted British Indian voters with leaflets that claimed that Sadiq Khan was after their family jewellery via a wealth tax.
Which is just absolutely ridiculous kind of levels of literally saying the reason that Sadiq Khan is in favour of a wealth tax is because he wants to try and lay claim to like Sikh's family valuables. That's proper stirring of like racial tensions right there, and the fact that they thought that there was a good idea in any form. Never mind nationally, but in London specifically, astounds me.
Are you saying that racial campaigns are all right as long as you do them in areas that aren't?
I'm saying they're not going to be very effective anywhere, really, but especially not in London.
Now, admittedly, there were a few Conservatives who condemned it as racist early on. There was a former Conservative candidate, Shazi Awan, who did. But still, you had senior Conservative figures in Number 10 and other senior officials who kind of peddled these lines, which Hope Not Hate says is telling. Also, we mentioned Boris Johnson with the letterboxes letters. We've got Michael Fabricant as well, MP for Lichfield, who shared a racist picture of Sadiq Khan. So when there was the Trump blimp.
Oh, this is the one where there's a pig and it's basically doing nasty things to Sadiq Khan.
I think it's a pig blimp having sex with a Sadiq Khan blimp.
Yeah.
And that was tweeted out, I think, by the leave.eu. Twitter account.
Sounds about right for them.
Yeah, Michael Fabregat shared it. Again, no real action, I don't think, was taken.
Of course, because it just going back to previous discussions on the far right. It's just a meme, Corey. Memes aren't to be taken seriously.
Bob Blackman, MP for Harrow East, posted an article last year on Facebook titled "Muslim Somali Sex Gangs Say Raping White British Children Part of Their Culture." And he invited Tapan Ghosh, who's a highly controversial anti-Muslim Hindu politician from India, invited him to Parliament in 2018. Ghosh also met Tommy Robinson when he was on that same trip, so that kind of tells you the kind of company he keeps. And then you also had, I think there were 14 members suspended for various Islamophobic comments as well. Again, so you've got Islamophobic election campaigns, you've got Tory politicians and members saying some of this stuff as well.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's not like there's nobody complaining about this stuff. I disagree with her on an awful lot of things, but Baroness Sayeed Awasi has been very vocal about the fact that she considers the Conservative Party at this point to be institutionally Islamophobic. She's, whenever something like this comes up, she is the person that's got the quote on there. She's been on TV talking about this. She has been going out of her way to raise this issue. And she's a former government minister. She's
former chair of the party, I think.
Yeah, I believe she was, yeah. So she's actually a relatively senior individual within the Conservative Party. And yet they're just kind of ignoring it because they don't seem to see any value in actually dealing with this issue.
I suppose they would claim that they've tried to deal with it in the, I think. So let's just go straight in, I suppose, onto why, and it's a bit of often a common complaint from people, say, on the Corbynite wing, people like Owen Jones and Aaron Bastani, saying, why is it that the Conservatives essentially have got a bit of a free pass on Islamophobia when a lot of media attention was focused on Labour anti-Semitism? So we can maybe talk about that for a little bit. I think part of it is just that Labour handled the anti-Semitism very, very badly.
Yeah.
It was tone deaf in a lot of ways. And I think it responded with more a kind of a moralistic, we can't possibly be guilty of this, rather than actually taking the concerns at face value.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where even just basic things like Jeremy Corbyn taking so long to even say anti-Semitism is bad without also adding and other forms of racism are also bad. Kind of like just refusing to kind of like separate it out as there was an issue that needed to be dealt with specifically. And I think what has happened with the Tories is that it's all lip service, but they've said, of course Islamophobia is bad. This is what we're doing about it. And it's just a stronger PR manoeuvre to do that than equivocate.
Well, and Brandon Lewis, who I think is the current chair of the Tory party, there was there was Islamophobic comments from a Tory member on Twitter, and this was brought to Brandon Lewis's attention. He tweeted straight away, this member's suspended straight away, we don't have any room for Islamophobia in the Tory party. Bosh. And this was seized on by a lot of prominent Conservatives as an example that they were tough on Islamophobia when Labour wasn't tough on anti-Semitism. Of course, turns out, actually, a lot of the councillors who, I think there were 15 councillors who've been suspended for Islamophobia who've been quietly reinstated back into the party. And there's other examples as well of members who have posts who've been flagged up but haven't been looked into for Islamophobia. And in fact, I think I'm right in saying this, if I'm not edited out, but that in the autumn last year, Brandon Lewis said there were no cases of Islamophobia outstanding in the Conservative Party, when theoretically there should have been a case on Boris Johnson for his comments about letterboxes and women in burqas. That there should have been an ongoing investigation there. So what's going on? I think it's just he's trying to brazen it out a lot better.
Effectively, I think the Tories are much better at crisis management than Labour are at the moment. So something comes up, this person's posted something here, Islamophobic online, well, we'll suspend them and investigate them. And at that point, the media's got their scalp. So when this does come out, the Guardian goes, brilliant, we've got them, we can move on to something else now. And then 3, 4 months, 6 months down the line, however long it is, there's no real, maybe there is an investigation, maybe it's not as thorough as it should have been, whatever, we don't actually know because the Tories have not been transparent at all with any of this stuff. they're let back out, back into the fold. And at that point, you're talking about something else, so it doesn't necessarily matter. Nobody's paying attention to this person. But because they took that decisive action immediately, or at least very, very quickly, the story moves on. And when you've got such a fleeting kind of media landscape where everything needs to be breaking news all the time, you know, people aren't going to look back 3, 4, 5, 6 months ago to see what's happened with this person.
Whereas in contrast, it took Labour 2.5 years to actually expel Jackie Walker. She was suspended for 2.5 years. A woman, by the way, who claimed that the Jews were responsible for the slave trade. And it took 2.5 years to expel her. And it's just...
It's a classic example. Anti-Semitism is a problem for Labour. Islamophobia is a problem for the Conservatives. But the PR elements of how they're handling it, Tories are just slick. They're taking that initial action and then going, look, we've done something. Hurrah, good for us. We're taking this seriously, and then ignoring it.
Is it also partly, Stephen Bush has said, I think, that Labour always is playing politics in a higher difficulty setting than the Conservatives. Is there something to be said for the argument that actually the media is structurally in favour of the Conservatives, who is more likely to give the Conservatives a free pass than Labour on this?
Possibly. I think it's much more likely to be not so much a kind of an open kind of bias of, oh, it's the Tories, we don't want to run with this. But I think it's much more likely to be the case that it's editors of the right-wing papers who are looking at these things, that these councillors or whatever are posting, and I'm kind of going, well, I don't see the problem with that. Like, this isn't a story. This is just PC gone mad or whatever. So we'll focus on something else. So, you know, I'm sure there probably is a degree of let's run with this over something else. Mate, if you've got the choice and you're a right wing newspaper of running a story on Islamophobia or Labour anti-Semitism, and you're actually looking to try and shape the media landscape, of course you go for the story that's going to paint your opponents in a bad light. But I don't think it is as kind of open as all that. I think it is just going to be kind of like just, in effect, structural Islamophobia that, like we discussed previously, so much, large portions of Britain do not trust Muslims at all. Like 47% of the country as a whole, 47% I think it was of like the Tories, Tory voters do not think that Islam is basically compatible with the British way of life. Well, chances are that if you take those right-wing newspaper editors, most of them probably vote in Tory, statistically, the chances are 47% of them, at least, are probably going to have that view as well. And that's before you get into the role of columnists and people like Rod Liddell or Douglas Murray or whatever, who are individuals who just constantly churn out articles which are pushing a kind of a borderline, if not openly, Islamophobic kind of worldview.
Well, and something we'll talk about in our media podcast on anti-Semitism is Melanie Phillips coming out and literally saying that Islamophobia is a fiction to shut down debate rather than being an actual issue.
Yeah, exactly.
I wonder if it's also... So whenever Conservative ministers and MPs are asked about Islamophobia, what they generally say is that they've never seen it in the party, it's not something they recognise. And I've seen this from a few Labour figures as well, or either kind of members that I've had a chat with about anti-Semitism. And in a way, I think that misses the point, because the whole point is, I've not experienced anti-Semitism in the Labour Party because I'm a straight white man who's not Jewish. So it's not me who's going to be experiencing anti-Semitism. It's more that you've got people who are Jewish or Muslim saying that there is anti-Semitism or Islamophobia, and what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
And so in a way, that response always seems disingenuous. What you haven't had on the Tory side are people like Chris Williamson, who's come out and said that Labour's been too apologetic about anti-Semitism. Now, if you had someone, the equivalent of someone like Christopher Chope, say, who had come out and said the Tories were being too apologetic about Islamophobia, that would have been a massive story, I think, and much bigger. But you haven't seen that.
Yeah.
And so I think, as you say, a lot of the PR on it has been better, and a lot of the lines to take have been better. And it's just taken Labour figures like too long to realise, okay, this is a problem, we need to try and do something about it.
Yeah, and I think also that kind of Chris Williamson comparison is probably quite a good one, because I think Williamson, at least up until recently, was kind of viewed as almost like someone who spoke for the leadership in a lot of issues. Not officially, obviously, but he was a former shadow cabinet member. He still has quite close links with an awful lot of like Corbyn's circle. So I think if you had that situation where someone like Christopher Chope had come out and said similar things of like, oh yeah, we're just too apologetic on Islamophobia, that in and of itself probably wouldn't even get the same kind of traction, because Chope isn't viewed as a mouthpiece for the leadership. So when you've so I think Williamson in particular is almost like a unique little case study.
That's almost an interesting euphemism.
Yeah, being viewed as a mouthpiece can be detrimental to your party if you're not actually towing the line 100%. And he wasn't towing the line 100%. At no point has the Labour line on anti-Semitism been, oh, we've been too apologetic on this. So if Chope were to come out with that, it wouldn't necessarily get viewed in the same way, because nobody thinks Chope's the mouthpiece of anything other than Christopher Chope, I think. So
no, that's a good point.
That's about it.
Right, so what we haven't really talked about then is the influence of the media. We've kind of skirted about it for these two episodes, but we'll talk more about that in our final episode on Islamophobia. In the meantime, we have a website, which is notenoughchampagne.com. We have a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/notenoughchampagne. James Cram designed our logo. You can follow him on Twitter at James Cram. And Dave Depp is responsible for our theme tune, Plucky Good Times. I'm at Paperback Rioter.
I'm at Acoustic Radical.
Happy plotting.